Ken O'Neill, Reel One. Please, could you tell me about your own personal part in the Arakan campaign, please?
Yes, most certainly. I will, from time to time, be making certain comments, either on specific operations or on more general matters. The comments I make will be views which are purely personal ones and may well not be agreed by others. Let me go back to the beginning, if I may, and start in Deir Dun, where the battalion reassembled after the first Chindit expedition sometime in August of 1943. Deir Dun was the regiment's home at the time, and I myself must have got back to Deir Dun after leave in early September. And when I returned, I found that we had a new commandant and a new second-in-command. The new commandant was Colonel Reggie Hutton, and our new second-in-command was Major Philip Panton. The previous incumbents had, of course, been killed in action in the early part of the year in Upper Burma. The new commandant had been the DDMI in GHQ Delhi, holding the rank of brigadier, and when he heard the 3rd Battalion had returned from Burma in a sad physical state, he very happily for us requested that he should drop in rank in order that he might command us for the future. And his arrival, together with that of Philip Panton's, seemed to make all the difference in the world to the morale of the battalion. They were both of the regiment and pre-war regulars. So when we found that we had men of our own to lead us once more, the past experiences we'd had under Ord Wingate were soon forgotten, and our main desire was to meet the Japs again and beat them, and beat them soundly. We did not stay in Deir Dun very long. It must have been a month or so, as far as I can recall. And sometime, late September, early October, that sort of period, we joined 25th Indian Division in a place called Conjeeveram, 6 miles south of Madras, where we were posted to 74 Indian Infantry Brigade. Our GOC was Major General Taffy Davis of the Garhwalis, who was well known to the regiment and had been Bill Slim's BGS during the 42 retreat. Our brigade commander was Brigadier George Hurst, a 2nd Punjabi. 25 did not stay very long in Conjeeveram and moved later to the Wynard jungles in the Nilgiris below Uttikamund, sometime in early November 1943, and 74 Brigade was based near Tepakadu. With another subaltern, John Sperling, I was posted as liaison officer to Brigade headquarters, much to my sorrow, therefore missing all the coming intense training. Training was expected to end in February of 44, when 25 Div was due to move to Ranchi as part of the Army Reserve. However, at the beginning of February of 44, Jap forces in the Arakan struck viciously at the 15 Indian Corps, hitting north towards Nachidok and south towards Akab. This blow was followed by an audacious advance across the Chindwin into Assam, and by the historic transfer of 5 Indian Division by air from Arakan to the Imphal front. As 5 Div's replacement, 25 Div was hurriedly ordered to Arakan. In mid-February, when the orders to move to Arakan arrived, 3rd 2nd Gurkhas was refitting at a place called Vadigan Halley near Bangalore, where I was able to rejoin the battalion once more. However, I was not initially given any appointment at all. On 27 February, the battalion's transport moved by road for Calcutta. On 9 March, the remainder of the battalion moved separately by rail to Madras, embarking 4 days later. Transport and the main body moved by sea direct from Calcutta and Madras, disembarking at Chittagong on 17th March. En route, a Japanese submarine attacked ship in the transport convoy, sinking it with the loss of 250 men. On the day in question, I just finished lunch and went to my cabin to lie down and have a rest, as I had nothing particular to do. And I must have been dozing when suddenly I was awakened by a very loud noise. It sounded like a heavy metal object hitting the side of our ship, or the sound of many rope ladders being chucked from the deck downwards over the side of the ship, and the wooden steps of those ladders making a tremendous rattling noise. I just couldn't determine what the noise was, but it was a very odd sound indeed. I didn't have much time to think about what had caused the noise when suddenly I heard the ship's tannoy system announcing that boat stations would be taken up immediately. So I put on my felt hat and grabbed my May West life jacket and ran to our assembly area on one of the upper decks. There I found myself standing next to the second command, Philip Panton, who joined the MT convoy in Calcutta, and I saw he was looking through his binoculars intently at a ship which must have been, oh, perhaps a quarter of a mile away. And suddenly he handed his binoculars over to me and said, "Look, have a look at that ship over there." So I took his binoculars and looked through them, and it was plainly evident that the ship was in trouble. The bow had started to rise, and the stern was definitely dipping towards the sea. At the same time, I could observe hundreds of men leaping off the decks into the sea. Within literally moments, the stern disappeared onto the waves, and the bow went higher and higher and higher until the whole ship was practically vertical in the water, and then, in a flash, it disappeared from my sight. And the first thought that came to my mind then was, oh my God, the sharks of the Bay of Bengal will have a real feast on their hands. And I have no doubt that some of those unfortunate 250 men who were lost were very likely taken by sharks. After that episode, of course, every one of us was imagining a Jap periscope peering over every wave in the sea. However, there were no more emergencies, fortunately, and after disembarking at Chittagong on the 17th of March, 74 Brigade concentrated at a place called Chiringa. On the 21st of March, a recce party commanded by Philip Panton, including me, although I still had no appointment in the battalion, moved south by Jeep and Dodge 1500 rate, via Cox's Bazaar and Borley Bazaar to Razzville Crossroads and the Mongdaw Buthidong Road. On the 23rd of March, 3rd 2nd Gurkhas took over Razzville Fortress, as the crossroads were known, from troops of 5th Indian Division, a machine gun company of the Frontier Force, in fact. Shortly before we'd arrived in Arakan at Razzville, 5 Div had fought a very vicious battle indeed to seize Razzville Fortress from the Japs of 55 Division. And signs of the battle were everywhere. The feature was a horseshoe-shaped feature, and eventually when my own battalion arrived and took over complete, the positions vacated by both the Japs and 5 Div. We found that most of the battalion were accommodated on the north of the road, and one company was on the south of the road within a matter of 50 yards or so from the main body. The 74 Brigade now held a 6-mile front from Mongdor, 6 Ochsenbucks, through Razabul, 3rd Second Gurkhas, to just west of the tunnels, 1410 Baluch. The 2nd Brigade of the Division 53 Brigade held a 2-mile front from the west tunnel, 4th 18th Gawaris, through east tunnel, 17th 5th Marathas, to Tindor, 9th York and Lanks, which was 4 miles west of Buthidong on the Calapansan River. To our north was the 3rd Brigade, 51 Brigade, and they held an 8-mile front to the north of Razabil along the Borley Bazaar-Razabil Road, from a place called Narongdong, 8th 19th Hyderabads, and just north of Narongdong, 16th 10th Baluch, to Weybin and the Natchitoches Pass, 8th York and Lanks. South of 74 and 53 Brigade position, for some 50-odd miles, stretched the Mayo Peninsula. On the western flank was the Naff River, and then, to the west again, the Bay of Bengal. Foul Point, north of Achab Island, was the southernmost tip of this peninsula. Let me describe the country roughly in that area, because it was, as far as I was concerned, quite unusual for Burma. There was a 4-mile or so strip of paddy and tidal mud swamps which lay between the sea and the north-south running Mayu Range. Beyond the Mayu Range lay to the east lay the Calapansan River, which flowed into the Mayu River and then into the Bay of Bengal and north of Achab. The description of the terrain in the coastal area, it was really very simple to describe. It was a wide strip of paddy, as I said, and with streams or small rivers running down from the Mayo Range into the sea. These all were tidal chongs, and when the tide was in, they were exceedingly difficult even for infantry to cross. Between the paddy, there were what I can only describe as mini foothills between the paddy and the Mayu Range itself. These foothills were probably no more than 50 to 100 feet in height and were clad in long grass and lantana. The Mayu Range itself was primary jungle and bamboo thickets, and the intervening spurs of the ridge were exceedingly steep in most parts, and cross-country patrolling was exceptionally tiring. The Chittagong, Borley, Razabil, Don Bike dirt track road continued south through the paddy between the range and the sea to Foul Point. Troops of the Japanese 55th Division, who were opposing us, were holding a line roughly from Point 551, 1 mile southeast from the east tunnel, southwest through a feature called Cock on the Mayu Range, south again to another feature, Tiger, then Point 1433, and southwest off the main range to Point 904 and Bird, with standing patrols in the area of Point 109 on the Godasara Chong, covering the north-south dirt track road. This north-south road, as I said, was a dirt track one. We later in the war would have referred to it as a jeep track. Whereas the east-west road from Mongdor through Razabil to Buthidong was an inferior metal road, originally built for a railway. This Mongdor-Buthidong road was the only thoroughfare of importance in Arakan, and therefore of considerable strategic importance. The Japs earlier, thwarted in their drive into East Bengal, proposed to hold the Mongdor-Buthidong road as the main artery of their defence system. As the road turned north to cross the Mayu Range, it pierced subsidiary spurs by means of two tunnels, a mile apart. These tunnels were so situated as to be able to, if held by infantry, cover the key crest of Point 551 to the east, and constituted the anchor position of the Jap defences. After the arrival of 25 Div, 15 Indian Corps, under command of General Christensen, ordered 36 British Division and 26 Indian Division to eject the Japs from the tunnels on the crest of the Mayu Range. 32nd Gurkhas started patrolling at once after our arrival, and on 23 March we took our first 75mm harassing fire attack from neighbouring Jap artillery. And at this stage I became an intelligence officer. Since I knew absolutely nothing about being an intelligence officer, Colonel Reggie Hutton very sensibly sent me off on a two-week course to the intelligence school at Karachi. And I must have gone off on that course sometime in very early April, returning in that same month. On the 26th of March, C Company patrolled east along the axis of the Mongdor-Buthidong road to maintain contact with the 14th 10th Baluch. When C Company had reached the Baluchi position, they found they had been cut off by a Jap roadblock, which was mounted 1 mile east of Razabal. Captain Stuart Jones took out a carrier section to break up the roadblock, and a brisk firefight ensued, the Japs replying with heavy machine gun and mortar fire, and the section commander, Havildar Kumbagurung, was killed by a mortar bomb splinter. C Company, however, were able to return quite easily by bypassing the roadblock and returned safely to Razabal. The following morning, a number of fighting patrols went out to deal with the Jap roadblock, only to find it had gone. For the next 2 months or so, constant recce or fighting patrols went out along the battalion's front, mostly on a daily basis. It was surprising that we had very few contacts with Jap patrols, and it was a puzzling aspect of this early part of our campaign in Arakan. The Japanese seemed to be concentrating on holding their positions on the high ground on the Mayu Range and disregarding the paddy area completely. Anyway, as far as I was concerned, I had two episodes of some interest. The first occurred when I was taking number one platoon of A Company on a fighting patrol down south from Razabal, along the low foothills. And we came across two villagers moving to our left in some flat ground. They were moving away from us, so I sent Lance Naik Jar Singh Rana and two riflemen to apprehend them and bring them back for questioning. The Arakanese were mostly very, very friendly towards us and absolutely pro-British. And I thought it might be some use to talk to these two villagers and ask if they'd seen any signs of Jap movement. But when Lance Naik Jar Singh approached them, they both fled. And having had our experiences the previous year in Upper Burma of villagers betraying our patrols, the enemy, Jar Singh took the only correct action he could, and he shot and killed both of them. They turned out, eventually, to be men known for their pro-Japanese feelings, so it wasn't a case of merely shooting to death two innocent villagers. The pair may or may not have been related. One was a man in his late 20s or 30s, and the other was a youth in his teens. The other occasion, which was more exciting, was when I was told to take a recce patrol down to a river known as the Godasara Chong to see whether the Japanese were patrolling eastwards along a track which ran beside the northern bank of the Chong. Colonel Reggie wanted to know whether that was a route regularly used by Japanese toing and froing between the high ground and the paddy area. I took this patrol out, as I say, of platoon strength, number 10 platoon of D Company, and when I reached a feature known as Point 90, I dropped off the platoon headquarters and two sections, and took another section commanded by Lance Corporal Nandabarapun on further towards the Godasara Chong. When we got to point 109, which was a feature almost overlooking the Chong, I dropped the section off and asked Nandabara, the section commander, to give me two riflemen to take forward to make a reconnaissance of the track itself. He gave me two riflemen. Their names were unknown to me then. One was well known to the British officers and had the nickname of the Gremlin. He was a strange-looking little man with a very worried expression, and how he got the nickname of the Gremlin, I don't know, but the Gremlin he was. Anyway, I took these two chaps down through very thick lantana, which was head height. We dropped down from point 109 towards the Godasara Chong, the whole while we were in very thick lantana. And suddenly I came upon the track. The rains had not started by this stage, so the track surface was dry and dusty in parts. And looking out on the track, I could see immediately that the track had been very recently used by 20 to 30 Japanese. I could see their boot prints in the dust. I looked left, and the track went out of my sight, I think a left-hand bend towards the hills. To my right, the track was absolutely straight. And as I turned right to look to see what condition the track was, I suddenly saw the Gremlin out on the track, standing on the track, and looking around. So I hissed at him and beckoned him back into the cover and was about to go to where he had stood on the track to brush out his tracks with some leaves of lantana, when I heard from my then rear, as it was, the sound of Japanese approaching. Could hear them talking amongst themselves. And I judged that they would probably be coming round that left-hand bend very shortly indeed. So we pulled back into the cover of the lantana and crouched down some 5 to 10 yards from the track itself. When the Jap patrol, it must have been of platoon strength at least, got to where the Gremlin had stood on the track, they suddenly stopped. We could hear them chattering away amongst themselves. It was clear to me and to the two riflemen who were with me that they were discussing the boot prints they'd seen and deciding what action they would take. And it was pretty clear to the three of us that they would try to search the area in which we were presently hiding to see who had made the tracks. A few moments later, we could hear the Japs moving into the thick cover. And the Gremlin's face was a study. He was looking at me and mouthing something which I couldn't hear and pointing wildly over his right shoulder to indicate to me that the Japanese were coming round in a flanking movement. But I decided it was high time to leave. We'd discovered that the track was being used by the enemy, and three men against the platoon was hardly equal combat. So we crept away quietly, as slowly and as silently as we possibly could. It was difficult because the lantana being thick, we were making rustling noises the whole time we were trying to get back to where I'd left the section on 109. And we succeeded in outstripping the Japanese without making too much noise, but eventually found ourselves in a swamp. And trying not to make a noise going through the swamp, one of my boots got caught up in some tree roots, and I toppled forward and put out my left hand to stop myself falling with too great a splash. And when I pulled my hand out of the swamp, sadly, the signet ring I was wearing on my left hand, which my mother had given me, it was her own signet ring before I left home in 41, had gone under quieter circumstances, of course, I would have searched the ring. But it was gone, and we had to go too, and go quickly. We got ourselves out of the swamp, and I returned up the hill to 109 to Nundabara's section, and we all hightailed it off up the ridge to where I'd left the rest of the platoon. We returned duly to Razabil to make my report to the CO. In retrospect, I was surprised the battalion never took any action on the information I'd brought back. I thought that track might have been a very suitable place for an ambush, but perhaps Colonel Reggie thought he had other things which were more important to do with the battalion. But we didn't follow up that recce patrol. The next thing of interest that took place was on the 31st of May. Jock Stuart Jones, who'd by now taken command of B Company, the original company commander having returned to India sick with malaria, he took his company under command of 53 Brigade, if you remember they were situated in the tunnel area, to make deep reconnaissance patrols round Point 551. And one of these patrols suddenly came across four Japs of good physique with their rifles slung. The Japs, by hand, gave to our soldiers the washout signal and shouted in Nepali, "Tikh Sasati, Fainava." All right, friend, don't fire. They made a point of learning Urdu or Nepali, depending on which Indian or Gurkha troops were in their area, and they hoped by if they made a good fist at the language, they would be perhaps thought to be friends initially, during which time they could give us a thick ear. However, being fearful of treachery, the Bren gunner of this section patrol killed all four of them, and Jock's company eventually returned to Razabil, having penetrated some 12,000 yards behind the Jap lines and brought back much useful information for 53 Brigade. The monsoon of 44 was late that year, and did not start until about the 15th of June. Patrolling continued apace during the rains. One of these patrols, these monsoon patrols, I was required to take out, and it was an interesting patrol, and 30 years after the event, I wrote for our regimental journey an account of that patrol, which I will, if I may, read out to you. One day in mid-June, Colonel Reggie showed me a brief written operation order from Brigade Headquarters, which detailed the battalion to send a fighting patrol some 10 miles south and behind enemy lines to show the flag, kill as many Japanese as possible, and to capture an enemy prisoner. He told me that I was to command the patrol, which was to come from B Company, and that the Brigade Intelligence Officer, Captain Val Meadows, of the 12th Frontier Force Regiment, would accompany me on the patrol. The Commandant further told me that I should report to Brigade Headquarters the following day to be briefed on the coming operation by Val Meadows and Captain Morris Budd, who was also in command of the V-Force patrols operating as a screen in front of the Brigade defensive line. I've been working closely with Val